With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Here at Guitar Nerds, we're big fans of iZotope software and their impressive range of plugins. And you, dear listener, get 10% off all iZotope plugins at iZotope.com with discount code NERDS10. Every Guitar Nerds podcast for well over 5 of its 10 years has been edited, polished, and repaired using iZotope's wonderful range of tools. From their Nectar Suite to EQ, compress, and lightly add reverb to give the impression that Matt and I are in the same room, to the RX Repair Suite to deal with pops, clicks, and background noise. In fact, every sound sample that you hear on our podcast is mastered using iZotope's Ozone Mastering Suite, and I can even compare audio EQ and levels to other similar released material using iZotope's Tonal Recall. It's all very good, and believe it or not, there are a bunch of free plugins that you can try. A vinyl simulator for added character, the Ozone Imager for help visualizing your stereo mix, and a vocal doubler for added richness and depth to your vocals. Pretty neat. Check it all out at iZotope.com.
Do you know, JD, I'm actually terrified of lifts or elevators for our for the American listeners, but it's okay really, because I take steps to avoid them. Yes, nailed again, JD and dear listener, nailed again. I think that was okay. That was.
Oh, it's good. That's good. That's one to tell the grandkids about.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but you know, I'm running out of good jokes, though, dear listeners. So I would appreciate people sending in any recommendations for good dad jokes to start the episode. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by JD Short.
Hello.
Hello, indeed. Hello, dear listener. Welcome back. We're recording this episode a little bit in advance, actually, only a day after recording the previous week's one, because I'm off on tour when this episode will, in fact, come out. But that's okay, because it was a good excuse for us to get you back on our podcast, JD, because we haven't done one since the guitar show, and I feel like we've still got a bunch of stuff from that show that we want to talk about, because we only managed in, it was kind of bumper length, that episode as well, and in what was nearly 2 hours across both the Patreon and the main episode, I think we got about halfway through all the things we actually wanted to discuss.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's been weeks now, and I'm still sort of coming down from that guitar show. Like, it was a really, really good show, and there's just so much to see and so much that was cool, and if it wasn't technically new, was new to me or new to us or something, you know, and there's like loads of really, really great things to talk about.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And in fact, I think we only spoke about this on the Patreon, so worth giving it a shout on the main episode. You bought the 1999 pedal
1991.
Yeah.
The 1999 is the new pedal they're working on, I imagine. That's purple. And it's just going to be the really clean guitar sound from Prince's 1999. If not, please, can you make that? Thank you.
That's absolutely what it should be. Oh, wow. Yeah. Yes. Well, yeah. Funny Little Boxes is the brand that we're talking about, dear listener. Funnylittleboxes.co.uk if you want to check out their website. They just do the 1991 pedal. I think we spoke about it last week. Completely new to me. It was the first time I'd come across this pedal at the show, and yet everyone we spoke to spoke about it like it was some legendary thing that everyone knew about and everyone had purchased. So
yeah, like so many people early in the show were like, 1991's here, you know, whatever. Yeah. And I was like, well, I think they're called Funny Little Boxes, but you know, like they're like it was like the murmurings of the show. I was like, oh, they're here. Yeah. So it's a really, really great, really great pedal. What I found interesting about it is that when we played it at the show, it was with headphones and on guitar, and like I was doing a lot of like really high gain, like kind of stacked gain, high gain stuff, and I fell in love with all the pinch harmonics I was pulling off, and I was like, this is great. I'm going to keep the definitely getting this. And that's what I was thinking about using it for. And then I got it home and started playing it with bass. And I use it as just a really good dirt pedal for bass. And I was just, it's just a really flexible, excellent sounding, well-built pedal that intentionally is under $100.
Yeah.
You know? So it's such, I mean, it's everything I want in a company design pedal wise. Plus it's, you know, it's pink, so we love it.
It's a very bold pink. It's a proper lipstick pink, isn't it? So for listeners who haven't checked out the 1991 pedal, although I feel like we're the last ones to know about it, obviously, listeners, you probably guessed it is a distortion, but it's a distortion with a pair of gain stages on there. Is that right? I can't remember the controls off the top of my head.
Yeah, so it's basically gain volume in essence, and then bass mid treble you kind of get. So it's like, I think it's, you know, cascading gain stages and stuff. And the pedal originally was meant to recreate the guitar sounds on Pearl Jam's 10, like that album, which I think are some of the best guitar sounds, certainly emotionally for me from that era. And it's interesting because like I didn't know that when I played it, and then when, you know, like after buying it, and I wouldn't have guessed that, but now that I have it, and you know, I've certainly seen some of the videos of them recreating the sounds, and it's like, yeah, completely, that's what it is. But like, it's not just that, if you know what I mean. Like, it's not that kind of, it's not the only thing and that it can do. It's just, I haven't really been this excited about a drive pedal I didn't know about for quite some time.
It's great, and it sounds great on bass. So, dear listener, you know, worth having a look at just as a general drive pedal to get you through any situation. But it is, you know, it's a full on drive pedal. You're not going to get any transparent. There's no sort of green overdrive sounds available with this one.
Yeah, it's not a, you know, some sort of angry simian or some sort of misbehaving primate kind of sounds, but it's good. Yeah, I mean, I really like it. Definitely overdrive sound, but it's great.
Yeah,
it's great. Yeah, distortion, I'd probably say, instead of overdrive.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, distortion is probably the right way. I'm sure that's how they describe it, but it is very good, very affordable, absolutely worth a punt, dear listener, if you're looking for something like that, something heavy and saturated, and you don't want to spend a whole bunch of money. It is a very, very good option. Another pedal company that said pedals actually landed since we were at that guitar show is the Redbeard FX Hairy Squid, which did again, dear listener. I'm aware that we're regurgitating a little bit right now, things that we spoke about, but it's finally out and about, because the Redbeard FX, whilst Mikey had it on his stand, and I think he said that he'd sold, you know, by the end of the first day, he'd sold, you know, more than enough to cover his the cost of being there and the stand and everything. So it'd been super popular, but it's finally actually out and released, which is very cool.
Yeah. I think that's another, you know, I know we talked about it a bit, but that's another really great pedal. and just really, really flexible. And then certainly if you want a pedal that does multiple things,
right.
You know, like there's like multiple sounds built in, which I've been into recently because I've either been trying to have a smaller board or have only taken like one drive pedal if I do like fly dates or something like that. So it's really into the idea of being able to get multiple different kinds of things with one box.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because I'm definitely very much not looking into digitally things or stuff with screens. I don't especially like using stuff with large menu hopping and having to press lots of buttons to change things. Having pedals that can do multiple things and allow you to do that by just adjusting switches and rotary controls, I'm a big fan of. And the Hairy Squid absolutely does that. It's just a massive sounding fuzz with three different clipping modes and then a volume, tone, and gain. If anything, it's probably the most straight up pedal I think that Redbeard have done. It's definitely got the least controls on it. Only having three rotaries and one switch is the least controls I've ever seen on that there has ever been on a Redbeard effect. So,
yeah, and from what I remember playing it, like you can get. Like the different clipping modes sound quite different on it as well. Yeah. Like there's a couple pedals I have where it's like, you know, you're going between silicon or LED and then it's like, well, I mean, there's a bit of difference. It's not like, it's not night and day, but like some of the Hairy Squid ones you can get quite different sounds just with like a couple knobs and, a three position switch. So
yeah. Yeah, but it's really cool. We need to get hold of one to actually try it out properly because on the stand, Mikey's got this like two note setup, but I found it quite dry sounding on headphones, and fuzz is just the worst effect anyway to try and listen to without an amplifier for it to run into because it's going to react differently no matter what you're playing it through. So hearing it on very dry headphones, it wasn't really a great idea. Like it was difficult to almost hear the difference between the clipping modes because what I was hearing was the headphones get absolutely smashed on each setting.
Yeah. I always find this with distortion and fuzz, especially that it's the one effect that I find has to have some sort of like amp simulation, at least if you're going dry. And like the two notes, I think that sounded, I definitely would have helped, but I find like, yeah, it's just so important to listen to it in a room or listen to it as you might actually hear it with, especially if you're going for a really loud, buzzy fuzz. Cause that's the thing is that fuzz always sounds to me like a little more buzzsaw-y than I want it to through headphones. And then when you hear it in the actual room and the stuff I like with fuzz, it's just someone's there. Plus I just really like to feel fuzz in my chest, you know, which is the what I think the thing, because right now I'm currently, my main fuzz at the moment is the Thorpey Fallout Cloud, and that one I love clicking it on because I mostly just feel it, you know, like in rehearsal. It's just like, oh, my rib cage is rattling now, so it's great.
What controls do you get on the Fallout Cloud?
It's typical, like volume, sustain, and then bass treble. But I think they're active boost, like bass treble. So it's I really like those controls because one of the things I always find with fuzz for me and what I do on bass is like I often don't want a lot of the high end. Like I don't want the sizzle. I just want the low woolly kind of stuff. But then even though it's there's no blend on it, which I also think sometimes can sound weird on fuzz, so there's no blend, but like having the bass and just being able to keep the low end like fully there when you kick it on is really helps. So I think plus I mean they're built like a tank and they look great, and I like all the Fallout video games, so the fact that it's called Fallout was partially one of the reasons I definitely got it.
What you say about the clean bend is really right. I think it's dear listener, I guess this is going to apply far more to bass players here, but certainly, and I mentioned it plenty of times on the podcast, a clean blend is a real essential for bass players on most effects. Mm. But because of that, when something has a clean blend, I tend to use it quite in quite a full-on manner. I'll throw in quite a lot, especially, you'd think, with something like a fuzz. I'm like, well, I want a big fuzz sound, so I need to make sure all my fundamentals are still coming through, so I'll crank the clean blend. And I was doing this with the KMA Machines Chief Disruptor, which we're going to talk about some KMA machines in a bit. But I was doing it with that, and I was like, oh, I'm not quite getting like the bass sound I want. I don't know. It was like it felt like two sounds. I can't describe it very well, but it just wasn't gelling. And I rolled off the clean blend, and then I was like, oh yeah. Oh, there it is. Like, I didn't remove it completely, but I just brought it down to about a quarter. So it was being very supportive rather than being overpowering. And it was like, oh, there's the fuzz sound that I'm after. It's easy to, I guess what I mean is it's easy to fall into just maxing out a clean blend as a bass player.
Yeah, I think that like it sounding like there are two signals is completely right. And it's one of those things where it just doesn't. I do the same thing, I should say, is that I tend to have the effect sound like I want and then use the clean blend to bring a bit more stuff back in. Right. And I think it's one of those things that it does work. I use it quite a bit on guitar because a lot of effects I have clean blends on them, or I'm used to running crossovers or different sort of things anyway.
Yeah.
Which is basically what I use a crossover for is a global clean blend in a sense. But I find it if you're doing stacked distortions or something, or you have like a transparent overdrive or an overdrive into a different overdrive or distortion or something, that if that last distortion or overdrive has a clean blend, it's good to still kind of keep that general signal you have just kind of underneath it. The thing I find with guitar is if you're just using one pedal with a clean blend, it almost always sounds exceptionally weird to me. Cause like with bass, it doesn't sound weird. Cause you kind of want that low supporting bit, but like hearing a clean guitar on top of, or like underneath like a fuzzier guitar setting just always to me reminds me of that Bill Bailey sketch where he does like where he's doing like the edge, you know, and it's like all the effects, and then like they cut off and he's just playing like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star or something. Like it sounds so ridiculous.
It's when you're like smashing a chord really heavily, a completely dry, completely clean guitar doing that sounds weird.
I always say this, is I'm not the only one, but like for me, for electric guitar, it starts at the strings and goes all the way to the speaker. That's the instrument. And so everything in between, so all the pedals, all the amp, everything that's there is all part of that instrument. And you play it differently when any of those things are there than when they're not there. So,
right.
Yeah. Which is why like a lot of times it's always weird because like now with a lot of modeling technology and everything, when you're recording, I still like to take a DI signal from guitar if the opportunity presents itself, because one, then I can reamp easier than anything else I want to do, or I can add on, you know, some plugins or whatever I want to that signal, and just like that clean signal. I almost never use it, but it is hilarious to just listen with just like that album. So if you like listening to like a punk record with just like clean guitar over the top, like really clean Strat, you know, something there. It's like, oh, changes things quite a bit. Sounds like, you know, Buddy Holly or, you know, like a big bopper on top of like on top of Descendants or Dead Kennedys or something. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet. Well, you on the KMA thing, you actually because you met you met Bruce, from ADG, who support KMA at the show, and you were a big fan of a lot of the KMA pedals you tried there. You own a Queequeg and then a Queequeg 2, but you ended up getting a few more bits, right?
Yeah, I sort of got lost a bit in playing all the KMA stuff at the show. One, I mean, they all look amazing anyway, and the Queequegs, I really like my Queequeg, so you know, there's like trust factor and stuff. But yeah,
octave pedals, by the way, dear listener. I'm terrible at doing that at the moment. I just say names of random pedals that people won't necessarily have heard of, but they're sub-octave pedals.
Yeah, so it's basically, yeah, they're basically like the analog octopedal. So I got the QuickHug 1 before QuickHug 2 came out. And QuickHug 1 was just an octave down. QuickHug 2 is two octaves down, which I very rarely use, but I like to have. But it was also top-mounted jacks. And I was putting together a flyboard, and the top-mounted jacks meant I could get one more pedal on that little, like, the smallest...
Was it the pedal train? Smallest
pedal train. Yeah, pedal train nano. So I was like, ooh, yeah, it's worth it to do that. So I have a couple of those. So yeah, I ended up getting one of the ones that I've been thinking about getting forever is the Worm 2, which is the newest version of their sort of the heavy metal pedal. I think it's their
HM2 inspired pedal, I guess. Isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, I've wanted that for a while. It's also a Worm and has a Worm on it, and you know, being a massive Dune fan, and I was like, well, it's Worm related, so obviously I have to have it. So I was going to pick up that one, and I did. And then I was then also looking at the Cirrus, because we talked about that a while back, which is their sort of multifunction delay reverb modulated kind of space maker pedal. And because I've been looking for some of those, because I rely really heavily on the Boss RE20, and because I still the older one that I still use, I haven't gotten one of the new ones yet. I probably will at some point, because I just love the RE20 so much. And
well, that's the problem actually for me. Sorry, I won't take us off going, but that is the part. I can't say it to Matt, but the RE20 is so good. There's nothing more I want from it.
The only thing I want is potentially to get this single size pedal. Yeah. So instead of, because I have the dual, but the thing basically I use two settings in essence on the RE20, you know, for two different echo settings. One is a pretty straight delay. One is more classic tape delay sound. And then I use the twist function, which is the other pedal where you can step on it. And I use that for just a lot of noise and things like that. And part of me is like, oh, I could just do all of that in a single pedal.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And that would save a lot of space on my board and just weight and things like that. But I sort of like having it as two separate pedals, and it's like, well, am I just going to get a newer version?
Yeah. It makes it more easy to use live. Certainly, I considered the single one, but then I was like looking at all the alternate functions and things that you've got to press and select in order to get the other bits out of the pedal. And I was like, well, I can't do that whilst I'm playing. So the second foot switch becomes I'd end up having to, you know, put a control in little pedal anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, plus I just, you know, there's literally nothing wrong with the one I have that's right. been on my board since probably 2009-ish. If not before.
I wonder when they came out.
I don't remember. Like, I think I got it pretty early, but it's It's the one it's the delay I've recorded with for anytime I've had delay.
2007. I thought it was older than that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you think about that, that's still 15 plus years now. So.
Yeah, this is weird. I need to find a new adjustment point. Like, I think of anything pre Jurassic Park, which is 1993, if it's earlier than that, then it's old. But actually, that was a whole bunch of time ago now. So I need a new.
I did see something recently where someone was saying that in the 90s, like, people talking about the 60s and the 90s is the same as people talking about the 90s today. Like, in one of those, like, this is how long it is. And you're like, no, factually, I understand that that's what happened. But it's like, time is relative. That's not a thing. In fact, we're talking about a 1991 pedal, you know, like, it'd be the same as, like, people in the 90s being like, oh, I've got the original electric guitar.
I was hoping that the price of vintage gear is going up, but I was kind of hoping that some things that I own from the 80s and 90s would be worth more than they are. But in fact, that's something we're going to talk about later on the podcast. But anyway, we got sidelined. We were talking about the Cirrus.
So the Cirrus. So I've gotten that because the band I'm playing with now is a very atmospheric, post-rocky, whatever, fill in the blank. I don't know how detailed we need to be with, the micro labels that we all have. But, it's very atmospheric, lots of stuff there. And I was like, oh, this would give me something. I was looking for a pedal like that also wasn't the same pedal that everyone else has, thing. I really like those Queequegs octave that I could, and I was like, well, I'll pick up this here. So after having a little bit of a go, I was like, yep, this is good enough that I know that I'll like it and do what I want to with it. And then,
before you move on from the Cirrus, what I love about the Cirrus is that it seems kind of rare for a company to do this, but it's a delay and a reverb pedal where they haven't gone after making something functional and usable for everyone. It's not like that makes it sound terrible, does it?
No. But it's exactly what I wanted.
They've gone, let's make something that just does all the, to be fair, you can dial it back and get some really functional sounds out of it, but that's not what this pedal is about. It is an absolute soundscape tool. And you're not pushing it to its limits to get it to do weird stuff. That's totally within its wheelhouse, and
it starts at the weird stuff.
Yeah.
Like that's really what I wanted, because I have good delays, I have reverbs I like, and and that kind of stuff. And I don't really use reverb live all that much, unless it's the RE20. I only you really use reverb in like the studio, and if I'm doing that, I've got Bricasti stuff and ridiculous but. I just had a quick look at my pedal wall, and then I don't have, but delay wise, I have the Wazacraft, delay.
Oh, the DM2W.
If I want a really good analog delay, that I've got that, And so if that's all I was kind of after and stuff. So like I wanted this Cirrus, I want that soundscape magic box kind of thing. Yeah. So
magic box is an accurate way to describe that pedal, I think.
Well, thanks. copyright to Guitar Nerds. So I was like, that's the responsible thing to do. I'm going to get those two pedals. Those are the two I've been sort of after for a while. And then you're always going on about the Chief Disruptor. And you also know how much I love Big Muffs. And I was like, yeah, but I have the Thorpe. I have 14 different Big Muff variations, and everything. And then I played it and was like, yeah, I this is probably the – it's like the Big Muff with lots and lots of options.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's – That's another good thing for me to have. It's great.
It's three different master voicings that are inspired by three different Big Muffs. So you can choose, you can choose like your flavor based on that. And then having a comprehensive EQ. So yeah, you've got, you know, just a bass and a treble. You can choose whether that's pre or post. I think you can choose whether it's pre or post the gain stack. I can't remember that. And then you've got that mid switch. And so a second foot switch on the pedal with like a frequency selector, and then the mids control itself. So you can kind of boost or cut mids and have that on a second foot switch. It basically just means it's a completely shapeable Big Muff. You can make it, you can pull back in the mids that you lose from a Big Muff, or you can scoop it out and make it really metal sounding. It's just versatile, but like, still retaining that Big Muff sound, but you can actually hear it in a mix because of the EQ controls.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm really excited about it to just really have a go with it. And also the idea that you know, it could very well be at the end of the day that I have an all KMA and Mutron board, you know, like that. It's just like all it's going to be. It could just all be all KMA. And then, so I think we've established that I like the Queequegs. I also ended up getting the Moai. What's the Moai?
Moai Maya?
Moai Maya, yeah. Which is basically a multi octave pedal. So you've got your sub octaves and your upper octaves. Like switchable and things like that. And I really like an analog upper octave sound on a lot of stuff. It's one of those things I like to put it in front of. I like to put it in front of filters a lot, really.
Right.
Just because it makes the envelope behave differently. And I think it's a really good sound. Like, I don't use it so much for, like, when I use an envelope, I don't really use it so much for like funk kind of stuff. I mostly use it for like synthy sounds which is why I like the octave up and octave downs for that. So I'll take those, maybe a fuzz or something like that, then put that in front, you know, into an envelope and use that as a thing. So you get like a really dynamic attack and you kind of get that like wow, wow sound coming out with, like, so for like really dense, heavy things, it sort of makes the front of the note like pop out a lot, which is how I end up really liking using it. Is it just, it's sort of like that kind of soundscape design.
So. Yeah. 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 I'm a big fan of that pedal for doing wall of sound stuff, just because you can have two octaves, an octave up and your clean signal running at once, and you can blend each of them between and control them all on individual foot switches. That's very useful. I like that it has there's an effects loop in there for your clean blend, which is an oddly useful thing, because what you don't want if the clean blend, really what you're going to apply that to is a drive of some sort. If you're gonna put something in the effects loop on your clean signal, probably a drive. But you don't really want to drive your sub octave, especially not your sub octaves. You want those to say clean and fundamental. So having an effects loop which allows you to keep everything else as is, but affect the clean signal, that is extraordinarily useful.
Yeah, I think it's great, and it's one of those when you, especially if you are playing guitar or baritone kind of things, and having those like multi-layered setups where you have, you know, your low end goes through one set of amps or one set of pedals, your, you know, mids or uppers kind of do that. So
yeah,
you know, the people doing those really complex setups, I think it's just such a good way to be able to do that, and I agree, like the keeping your subs, you know, like out and doing what they want to do means that you can, it saves you rerouting your entire pedal board or having to have some sort of like extremely complex system to keep that out, which is what, like, I've done previously with like JHS built me a custom box years ago to do that kind of stuff, or I've done it with a couple different crossovers or splitters that I've just had to try to like basically run parallel signals in inside my board before it was, you know, easier, cool to do.
So. Before big boards were in fashion.
Yeah, because they were definitely in fashion when I got all the ideas that this is how I wanted to do it, and then, you know, no one wanted boards for a long time, and then now it's like board is most of your gear you take, certainly in town, it feels it, like.
It is. It's funny how switches have become essential.
Yeah.
Because they weren't. This is actually where I was going to go with the podcast next, but recently I was watching my favorite rig rundown with my favorite bass player of all time, Juan Odorete.
Oh, I think, oh.
But this great rig rundown, I can't remember from when, like maybe 2013, I don't know, like it's on YouTube, dear listener, if you want to check it out. It's on the last Mars Volta, or not their, well, obviously their back.
Oh yeah, I remember, I know this one. Yeah,
yeah, they just released Nocturnica, which is a terrible album, but it has some of one's most interesting stuff on it as a bass player. And he's doing a rig rundown with his setup, and he shows his pedal board, and I think, you know, and all the pedal boards for the Mars Volta around that time when they're showing them, none of them have switches, but they've all got like, you know, 20, 30 pedals on their pedal boards, and they're controlling everything individually. Mm. It's which sounds like an absolute nightmare, you know, now.
Yeah, I mean, because like I don't run, I have done in the past, but I don't currently run any switchers. And there's a, even now there's like one song we have where I basically have to do the tiniest little two step to be able to get, to get, you know, like these things on and off at the right times. But it's definitely one of those things where I felt maybe get a switcher. Also switchers now having reasonably desirable functionality is, and also being reasonably affordable, feels like such a relatively new thing. It wasn't really until sort of Boss came out with theirs before it was like, oh, maybe this is a thing. And the fact that it has other functionality as well, that you're like, oh, this is actually pretty useful piece of kit, you know. Sure. Like it's not just as exciting as buying a new like hard case, you know, where you're just like, this is really exciting if you gig a lot, but not, you know, like you can't really brag to your mates about it, you know. Like,
sure, yeah.
Check out my case, bro. You know,
hey, I'm impressed by hard cases.
Oh, me too. It's one of my favorite things. But still, like we are the minority, I would imagine.
Yeah, like, yeah. I imagine. I mean, the Boss switches are expensive. You know, you're over £600, and gig rigs the same. It is a lot of money for something that's just allowing you to switch between pedals. But the fact that now you have, you know, things accessible at the £100 mark is very good. I always really like the Carl Martin, the Octa Switch.
Yeah.
I just liked that it was simple. There was no menu, no dicking around. It was just like, here's eight switches. Each of them has eight little dip switches next to it. So you choose which things are on and off by selecting those for each one of these patches. That's great. That's what I want from a switcher.
I mean, that's an excellent shout. And I think those are actually that I might. I might check reverb here in a moment.
Unless you want to do all the weird, like changing pedal order things and all that stuff that Boss allows, the Carl Martin kind of has it for me. They're like £300, which is still, you know, not to be sniffed at. It's still a chunk of money, but it's, you know, they do everything that you could possibly need, and they're built like tanks.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely useful if you have the, this is my sound A, this is my sound B kind of things, you know, which are multi, which I do, as you know, I probably already talked about 10 different distortions like one time. Yeah. But if, you know, but if it's like I have some chorus on the chorus and then I don't on the verse, you know, like it's not really a thing you need, but
yeah, that is a good point. I mean, yeah, I didn't really think about that, but yeah, I guess on the MS3 that I use, the Boss MS3, even though it's, I know it's a multi-effects as well with a switcher, but it's nice being able to do things like I'll have on, you know, switch one, that's clean, so everything is bypassed. But if I hit one a second time, it adds in loop one, which is my octave. So my octave pedal isn't something I can get to from one press. It's, if I'm on something else, it's a double stop on pedal one. But I can add an extra function to each thing. So without having to go to my bank switcher, it turns four switches into eight switches. It's just some you double tap for, some you single tap for. And that is very useful, because then I've got essentially eight pedal options in a tiny little form factor on the MS3.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's such cool stuff. I also started playing about with my Mod Dwarf again the other day to just think about, like, gonna build up some patches, and not necessarily like I was trying to redo a pedal board, so it wasn't thinking of it as like each individual pedal has its own sort of on off switch, but really thinking about, oh, it's mostly, this is pedal board one, this is pedal board two, kind of thing. And then I could do like on offs for some of those things. And I was just trying to play about with some of the routing and things like that, which is such an easy thing to get lost in and spend an entire night like
the designing a board. But is the same as similar to like the Poly Bebo, in that it's open source tech, right? So it's a touchscreen thing where you're adding, you can make whatever pedal chain you possibly want.
Yeah, and I do all of it through, there's just basically just a browser interface, and you can load in loads of different plugins, and which are all basically, you know, models. So it's like drag and drop kind of stuff, and you're just like bloop, bloop, you know, and like infinite levels of routing and MIDI in and out and controls and all that kind of stuff. So there's lots and lots and lots of functionality behind it. Because I've also have it where I had samples loaded up. So one of the Belta Lauda songs we have has like a poem that's the vocals is someone that's not us reading a poem.
Right.
And that was one of the ways to have that just sort of triggered, was just I could do it through that pedal and just like stomp on it, and it starts the sample, you know, without having to have like many different pieces of kit.
That's very cool.
Also, to be fair, I have done the same thing with the Boss loopers, you know, that you can load in. So I can't remember. I've bought one of the little, I have about four different loop pedals. I never use loopers, but I had one just for that, basically to play samples. So,
yeah that, I mean, that is that I use RC3 in the band I'm in with Emma, Silas Fennick. That's, that's what, you know, we've got our first gig on Friday. It's a 30-minute slot, and I am bringing four guitars and three pedal boards. So because I've got so many guitar changes, it's virtually every song.
That you have a pedal board per guitar.
It's almost, but it's the one of the pedal boards is just a Boss RC3 running into a Fender dual marine layer reverb, when I'm changing guitar, I can trigger this like a little ambient sample, and I can manipulate the marine layer reverb just so that it's not just playing a sample, so I'm actually doing something, and I can mess around with the reverb. It gives it sort of a subtle, the way the reverb tail works on the marine layer, it's kind of like a subtle delay adjust almost, so you can get cool sounds.
I really like those marine layers. I always forget about them, but they're really, actually the whole series of Fender pedals are really good, like just
went under the radar a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, because I have their envelope that's
Pretty pour good. Over. The pour over envelope filter, yeah. I really wanted that. I've got almost every single one except for that pedal. I need to get that.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Cut you a deal. It's a really good. I also have like loads of different envelopes, so I'm very picky about envelope sounds. Anyway, we've talked a lot. Is that all the pedals, all the KMAs I got? Yeah, four.
Yeah.
That's four.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Tyler at some point. So
the Tyler, which is the switcher, which is kind of a simple, just a switcher that allows you to plug in two additional pedals, then blend in a clean.
You've got high pass,
high low passes. Yeah.
Really handy. Really good for being able to tailor things that you like doing, which is stacking drives. This allows you to do that and then really control those. So you can make a really full bodied overdrive sound, or not necessarily full bodied, just something really specific to what you want.
Yeah.
And you have absolute control. It's very useful for those who are fussy about overdrives.
Of which I will say I am. So, yes. Yeah. I mean, again, that makes my nearly KMA board more complete. So,
there you go. There you go. Well, yes, that is indeed the question duck, dear listener, which is the duck reminding me that when JD and I are done here, we're going to be heading over to the Patreon exclusive episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast over at patreon.com/guitar nerds, where every week I take a question or a number of questions from the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, and me and JD discuss them over there. So we've got kind of a few this week. I don't know exactly what we're going to go for. John Bai, who always puts great, honestly, he does half of my job for me. I should really put him on some sort of payroll, but he has some great suggestions this week. He said one of his questions is, name a guitar you love the look of but couldn't get on with the feel or how it played. I just had this experience with a PRS SE Custom. So me and JD might talk about that. Guitars that we thought were great but just didn't deliver when they actually came down to it. That might be a subject. And and also another one from him, and this is great, very topical, in the spirit of the Bad Monkey, which I've avoided talking about on this podcast, dear listener, just because it's everywhere. Come on, everyone's making a joke about it or doing something, but I can't, yeah, whatever, fine. Anyway, so he said, in the spirit of the Bad Monkey, what's the cheap piece of gear from your younger years you wish you'd bought as it's now worth a fortune? I personally wish I'd got a Gibson BFG. So maybe we'll do that. Maybe some others. We'll see. We'll see how those go. But JD, talking about envelope filters, now that DOD are back, I was thinking about getting their filter 440, the envelope filter 440. Now that it's back, do you can you weigh in on this? Any advice? Are they good? You tried one?
I mean, So I have a real soft spot for DOD in that they were sort of like in the US when I like in the 90s and stuff, when I was like sort of coming up getting a bunch of gear and whatever, like they were some of the ones you could get a hold of that were really good. And I just love a lot of the looks about them, and like all the ones that have become classics now, you know, like the 250, the preamp overdrive, and now for us, like the Meatbox, which is the like sub synth kind of thing, and some of those. But I haven't played their envelope for quite some time, but I remember liking it, but I'd have to listen to it again for that the 440.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Lots of guitar demos, dear listener. So if you're looking for this sort of thing for guitar, there's plenty out there for you. Very little for us bass players. But I should have actually done this under the news. I should have played the news jingle. I missed a trick there. But because the news is, of course, that it has been relaunched. But, you know, reasonable price. Looks like it's going for, you can find it for as little as £100.
I mean, for that, they're all great. Like I have and love the DOD grunge, like pedal, you know, which to me,
Kurt Cobain,
never sounded grungy to me. Like it was just like some like delightfully noisy, high gainy kind of mess. But like, that whole series of pedals around that time and stuff they did that were really like when the original Meatbox was there, and it's like, oh, look, it looks like meat. That's a fun paint job. Yeah. And it's not like they were different. We could check, you know, which one has the best marbling or whatever. But,
I it took me years to realize that the sort of the weird finish on the Meatbox was deliberate. I thought they were just all old and scratched up, because the first time I ever saw a DOD Meatbox was probably that 2013, the Juan Alderete rig rundown. He's got one of those on there. But
I feel that rig rundown is was the original sort of bad monkey of like getting things to be like, oh, and now it's expensive because we saw someone be like, oh, I got this thing that I just always like.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Definitely. But he, watching it, I was like, he's got an earthquake advice. I can't remember what it is. I think it's a drive of some sort, I think. Mm. But it's in a big box. It's in a weird big box. And he talks about it like he's like, oh, yeah, this guy who makes this company came up to me at a show and gave me one of these, and I kind of really liked it. It was before earthquake devices were established, and he just had a prototype because he'd been given one and loved it. I was like, oh, that's great. Back then, we didn't even know the Leviathan that company has become today.
It's some small town pedal, you know, someone making pedals in a small town somewhere. I mean, who was I talking? I was talking about this with someone recently. It may have been at the guitar show. Who knows? But it was about the idea that I feel like the internet's great. Well, obviously, I mean, yes, the internet's lovely. Thank you for all listening to this over the internet. But and further hot takes, check out. But the thing with but it's like the internet's great, but there's not the mystery there used to be around. Right. The kind of thing. So what we used to see, you know, like even like early mid 90s, like you would, if you were touring with bands or a band would come through, you'd see gear that they had and you'd be like, I've literally never heard of this thing. And you'd see like weird little boxes of stuff. And DOD was kind of one of those where it's like, you could only get it from certain places. And it was only if your local shop had one, you know, or there's like mail order in the back of, you know, Guitar Player magazine or something like that. And the fact now that we can all just be like, ooh, let me go see 12 hours of people playing the 440 filter on guitar only, apparently. I haven't checked this out. I realize we're missing a trick here and we should be doing, we could easily do bass demos. Of this kind of stuff, but yeah. Or need to have one first. That would be helpful. So,
yeah, I don't know who owns DOD now. I need to find out. Reach out.
Is it? Wasn't it someone recently? So I know. I think they're part of US Music,
right?
But that's like saying everyone is. Court, US Music, was Harmon for a bit.
Yeah, it's not Harmon anymore.
Yeah. Oh,
well, we'll see. We'll see. I'll find out further down the line. I'll get one. We'll do some bass demos, JD.
Yeah, let's do that. I need to bring, we'll plan this out at some point because I need to bring you my upright.
Yes. I need to learn. I want to learn upright, dear listener. That's my next big challenge. I've been fretless shopping at the moment, thinking about getting one of the Cort fretlesses. They do a lovely, an artisan fretless. It's got a Bartolini humbucker in the bridge, piezo pickup in there.
This may go back to like gear from your youth that you've always kind of wanted, but speaking of Cort, so there was the Curbo. Do you know the Curbo instruments? They were like big. I can't remember his name. It was like Gary Curbo. I can't remember if that's his name. So it was like early luthier, like top end instruments in like mid 90s. A lot of Nashville session guys had them and stuff. But Cort, or they licensed, like he passed away. They licensed, I think before that then, but Cort licensed some of his designs. And I think they do a fretless Curbo, but that's like one of those things where they have a unique look to them,
right?
I think it's like extreme sort of upper horn kind of stuff.
I see.
But they're one of the basses that, like, baby me was always like, oh, it'd be cool to have one of those like super pristine high end basses, you know, when it was still just like Padula and Ken Smith and like that era kind of stuff. So
yeah,
I'll find one of these.
Find a Curbo.
But that would be my hot take, because I keep seeing fretlesses come up, and I'm thinking about a fretless too, because I currently don't have one that's not my upright, and to be fair, most of my fretless recording has all been my upright, but I don't have one in the UK. I have one in the States, but it's in the States and I can't really use it.
So. Well, come fretless shopping with me. That's my next. Let's do that. That's what I want to do. That's what I'm going to do soon. Now, we do need to do Joe Puttick's topic of the week. So before we do, dear listener, each week I spin a wheel with all the names of our top tier Patreon supporters on the wheel, and whoever gets selected gets to pick the topic that's discussed on the following week's episode. Also, they get a goodie bag full of stuff. So I'm going to spin that wheel now, and we're going to find out who the winner is.
Spin the wheel. Spin the wheel. Spin the wheel. Spin the wheel.
There we go. This week, dear listener, the winner and the person deciding next week's topic is Suresh. Suresh, well done. Congratulations. You've outdone yourself there. I'll be in contact, and you can let me know what you'd like us to talk about. In the meantime, let's talk about Joe's topic. So Joe said, inspired by my recent vintage bargain and at the risk of you guys upsetting the market, what vintage dark horse, whether that's a guitar effect or an amplifier, do you think are still out there that haven't been overexposed and overhyped, and almost importantly, overpriced? Now, what Joe is talking about is the other day he bought a PVT-60, one of the incredibly heavy, very gorgeous electric guitars from the, I don't know when they're made, end of the 70s, early 80s, I guess. It's that sort of thing. It looks exactly like that. They weigh a ton. They're made out of ash. They've got like weird pickups that are PV's own design. I mean, they're US built. I think they're US built.
Those are all USB.
I mean, they're incredible. Like, build quality is amazing. They're built like tanks. They don't break. They're absolutely fantastic. I think Joe picked it up for something like 400 quid, like way, way under the value of what an American built instrument should be from that sort of era. And certainly, you know, this is going to be something I guess we'll maybe talk about on the Patreon. I owned a T40 bass, which I sold for very little. You know, maybe 300 quid.
A grand all day, every day now.
Exactly. And, you know, yeah, as they should be, though. It's for the age and the country that it was made in, the quality of parts, that's the correct price. So, yeah.
They're also probably the number one body for people putting aluminium necks on basses. Oh. So if you buy like an EGC neck or like one of those, like it's that's sort of the classic non-Kramer, non-Bean sort of, that's the next thing that you do.
I guess
it has those
that look, T40s. Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Has that that beanie, Kramery sort of.
Yeah. I mean, my first bass was a PV Fury, PV Fury P bass that my dad bought for me. And it was... and like PV, it's like I always have this weird association because PV was like, it feels like champion gear now, where you see like people wearing like champion sweatshirts and stuff. And I was like, that's the stuff I wore because we couldn't afford like anything else, you know? And then now it's like, oh, high fashion. And it's like, so PV always feels like that to me. In like that era when it was like all their amps and stuff were like PV Black Widow speakers and stuff like that. Yeah. Those were the creme de la creme you could get in that. And yeah, like what I wouldn't have to have like a T40 bass and like the guitar as well, you know, like there's apps. I mean, that price is absolute steal.
Yeah, £400 for a T60. Yeah. But what do you think? What do you think? Things that hasn't happened to yet. Vintage gems out there that are like sleeper gear.
So I have two pedals, which neither of them are that exciting, I would say, but they are to me. One is the Den Electro Cool Cat Chorus, so like the early 90s era one, which when it's like when they still were in the zinc bodies and it was like 18 volt pedal, like stereo pedals. That is still to me one of the best sounding choruses I've ever played. And I still have it still, and also same era, same like mid 90s era, like the EBS Octabass
Octave pedal,
which is I still have like they still make that, but I think they still sound quite similar. The one I have has two knobs and no, there's no switches or anything else. Like now you can have a couple different switches and all that kind of stuff. The circuitry for the one I have is just low. You know, it's basically like sub octave volume. It's basically like dual volume is all it is. So it's like volume for your clean signal, volume or direct signal, volume for the effects signal. And I think it tracks amazingly well. It doesn't sound like an analog. It's an analog octave. It doesn't sound like classic, like Boss, you know, OC 235s.
Yeah.
I think it sounds much more like the Mutron octave divider, which are my faves. And it also just, so like the, if you just had the sub octave signal, it just sounds like you're playing a note. It's just an octave lower, as opposed to sort of doing without sounding like a digital like replication of your note. It's just I think they're really usable, and I'm surprised every time I go to maybe buy a touring one, basically, because I don't want to use the one that I treasure like with other people spilling beer on it. Oh. Although this had beer spilled on it before, and it's still totally functional. So it's great. Some guy in Louisville, Kentucky, by the way. Hope he's not doing well. And but yeah, I think those are less exciting because it's a chorus and an octave pedal, and they can only ever be so much money. But although that being said, my Mutron octave is worth a bloody fortune. So
yeah, that's... Yeah, you've done well to keep on to that.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
What do you think? What's
it's tricky. Stuff that's still sleeper, because the thing is, it is getting so rare that stuff stays sleeper these days. Mm. Like the stuff that I thought that, you know, when people ask me this question, the stuff that springs to mind, I realize isn't anymore because it's become insanely expensive. Like, apologies, dear listener, I'll throw up a few more bass ones than I will guitar ones, but the Squire Matt Freeman P-Bass was kind of always the one that I thought when it was out, you know, when it was new, it was £400, and this thing was built, it was a 50s style, 57 style precision bass in a gorgeous off-white, also available in black with a black plate, maple neck, but it was kind of, I guess, a slightly more modern neck profile, so you got all the kind of looks of a 50s bass and still had quite a comfortable neck. Everything about it was fantastic. Pickups were well-voiced. I don't know what they were. I assume classic vibe standards, but they were very good, and it was £400. It was ridiculous. There was no reason to buy the Fender equivalent when that was out and about. But the cat is out of the bag, very much so with that now. And if you find one, because the people that own them keep them, so if you can find one, they're going for a grand. So it no longer counts in this category. Things that I think do count, well, actually, no, this one doesn't really, because I think it's still in production, but it's still in production at a very affordable price. No one talks about it or buys it. And as soon as they discontinue it, someone's going to be like, oh, this is obviously the best delay pedal ever. And everyone's going to, you know, try and get them. The Ibanez ES3, their Echo Shifter, which is the delay pedal that comes in a gorgeous wood-ended mint green sloped box with a fader control in the middle before fader controls were cool.
Those are excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, what I was about to say could be taken as absolutely stupid, but bear with. In that I always feel like Ibanez doesn't get enough credit for the pedals that they make.
Right.
And why I think that's dumb is clearly Tube Screamer. But, yeah. You know, like... it's sort of like they have probably certainly one of the most legendary pedals of all time and 50 different variations of that pedal. But the fact that, like, so much of their other stuff and, like, some of the stuff they were doing with like, multi-effects units, you know, like, analog multi-effects in, like, the 80s and stuff are just... Yeah. That's stuff I would say, too, is, like, stuff you can find as sleeper gear. So if you're willing to go rack, that's probably... there's some of the early mid 80s, maybe, like, late, like, Ibanez multi-effects unit, you can get... I saw some stuff recently for £150, maybe £200 that you could get easy, probably much easier to get in the States, I would imagine, as most gear is, really. So, you know, easy, like, just search around for those sorts of things, because it's, I think you can get lots and lots and lots of usable stuff for almost no money if you're looking at that kind of stuff. It's just, now I'm not advocating people start touring with, you know, well, I advocate everyone tours with a rack. I don't manage you to do it for like a pub gig or anything, but just to have at home, stuff like that too, I think.
It's kind of a good overall rule for stuff that's likely to be sleeper gear is it really heavy? Or is it really big? Yeah. Because that's what it's become so fashionable for. Everyone wants stuff to be small and lightweight or not exist at all and be completely digital. But there's such an obsession with it, which I think, dear listener, well documented on this podcast, is everyone abandoning the concept of things sounding good and that being something everyone thinks of later. I think we're in this point of time now, a bit like the 80s. You know how you look back on the 80s and you go, wow, all that digital gear sounded terrible. And you think you're sort of through that. We're living through that phase now.
Yeah. I think we're the early days of CDs where everything just sounds shrill, but we're like, but look, you can automatically, you could queue up which song comes next. I haven't really thought about this, and I don't want to get into like old man yells at cloud territory, but it does feel a bit like convenience is the number one thing that people are worried about, you know. And it's like, and not even just having arguments like, do neodymium drivers sound as good as regular, you know, traditional like magnet drivers? They don't. Do they? Can you get them to sound close? Yes. Is there any durability in neodymium? No. You know, like I don't want to get on a whole neodymium kick, but it's one of those things where it's just, yeah, like the idea of like amps that fit, like that can fit in your front pocket, you know, like it's okay to have an amp still be small, like the Ashdown Ants, perfect size, looks like a reasonable piece of kit, lot, you know, it's still small, fits in the gig bag, you know, like I have one that I use with that tiny little Stonefield mini or micro mini like speaker that I have. That's a full-fledged rig that is like doesn't even come up to my knees. That's great, you know, but it's not the kind of stuff where like, oh, check out my, like there's a Saturday Night Live sketch where Will Ferrell is like one of the ones there at Jefferies, and Will Ferrell pulls out this like super tiny little flip phone. It's what I always think about when I see like the ridiculous, like tiny amp heads. And I don't, things don't need to be big for big sake, but you know, as long as things still sound good, I just feel like we've stopped caring about if stuff sounds good.
Yeah. God damn. Well, there you go, dear listener.
Yeah. You old man yells at cloud.
It's fine. I accepted that's what I do long ago. Well, anyway, that's all the time we have on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. JD and me are going to go over and do a Patreon. If you want to get in touch with us for any reason, dear listener, you can. You can email us at info@guitarnerds.net or, far more simple, DM us on Instagram or write us on the Facebook group. If you're a Patreon supporter, you can contact us through Patreon. We're heading over there now. Join us there. Visit patreon.com/guitarnerds for all the info on how to sign up and support our charming community, which you can do, dear listener, for as little as $1 a month. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, dear listener, for listening to another episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. But thank you most of all to all of our top tier Patreon supporters. Without you, none of this would be possible. Thank you to Marcus Deluxe, Scott Guitars, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Rust Meehan, Barry Grisbeck, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Jared Brown, John Conaway, The Studio Rats, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Mark Hizau Kanawaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Peche, Andy Manley, Simon Milbourne, Joe Puttick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards,
Jason Wharton, James Dore, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Loseth, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordwick, Scott O'Brien, and Moog Gravit.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.